Welcome to the Oral History Review at the Oxford University Press blog. Occasionally, we like to break up the monotony of text posts with a podcast, celebrate the oral and oral history, so to speak. With these podcasts, we hope to give the Oral History Review's authors and editors a place to elaborate on or build upon their scholarship. Furthermore, as with all of our social media efforts, we aim to build awareness of the art and craft of oral history. The following podcast is hosted by Troy Reeves, the Oral History Review's managing editor and head of the Oral History Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Enjoy.
Thanks, Caitlin. I'm here talking to
Matthew Levin.
And we are talking about oral history, particularly as he used it in his book, Cold War University, Madison and the New Left in the 60s. Thank you for agreeing to speak with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I wanted to start by letting you have some space to give an overview of your new book.
Sure. The book is the story of the 60s in Madison, which is a story that's been told a couple other times. But like a few other 60s historians, I sort of take the long view of the 60s. So a lot of the book actually focuses on the 50s, the 1950s, and the context for what's, you know, much more familiar to us, the 60s. So I try and explore what I call the contradictions of Cold War era higher education, which is the idea that even as the university was becoming more and more involved in the Cold War, getting more and more funding from the federal government, it was also becoming a center for dissent against those same Cold War policies. And one of the examples that I talk about in the book, sort of the obvious example, I guess, is the campus's Army Math Research Center, which was an institute on campus created in the 1950s, the mid-50s. A lot of excitement when it was created, no hint of protest or any, you know, nobody was raising any concerns about it. It was sort of an example of the cooperation between the federal government, in this case the U.S. Army, and the university. And 15 years later, by 1970, this same institute, Army Math, would become the symbol, for students at least, of how higher education has sort of gone off the tracks. And the bombing, of course, is one of the more memorable moments of the era. So the book really tries to get at that background, the changes in the university in the late 40s, 1950s, into the 60s, and how those changes really played into the protest movement that we're more familiar with.
Great, Matt, thanks. So my first real question is, did you have an interest in oral history before you started researching and writing this book?
Well, I was a grad student when I started working on this, and I was definitely familiar with the arguments regarding oral history, sort of the pros and cons and some of the concerns that some critics of oral history raise. But I wasn't particularly a student of oral history in any real way. I was interested in using it. I was convinced of its usefulness. And when the interesting thing is, when I arrived in Madison, the way I really got into this topic was through a type of oral history, sort of the sharing of stories and the campus lore surrounding the 60s and the humanities building where the history department is, where there were these stories about whether the building had been constructed as a sort of response to the protests, because it, you know, for people that aren't familiar with it, it has sort of these narrow zigzag hallways. It's very difficult to find your way around, these little teeny windows. It's a strange building. Of course, the stories were wrong. It was already designed prior to the outbreak of campus protests, but those kinds of stories sucked me in. So it was sort of an interesting way that I stumbled upon all this to begin with.
So you sort of allude to this in your previous answer, but why did you then choose to use oral history as one of the, I guess, tools in your toolkit to write this book?
Yeah, well, it was really an obvious choice. There's a lot of other books on the 60s that use oral history. Some of them are actually purely oral history. And I really didn't have any doubts that I was going to go that way. I did spend hours and hours and hours looking through more traditional manuscript collections, old newspapers and such, but I think it's pretty fair to say that oral history sort of gave me the opportunities that I just couldn't get from the the manuscript collection. Pretty cool, just for example, that when you have a research question that's kind of bugging you, that you can ask someone about it. That's something you can't do with written documents.
And Matt, you also found oral histories at the UW-Madison Archives, too, to use. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I conducted, over a dozen oral histories on my own. Some of them were multiple sessions, and I used probably a couple dozen from the UW Oral History Project, which is a great project with hundreds of interviews on all kinds of topics that's been going on for decades now. And those were great. Actually, one of the things that were really wonderful about those interviews is that I could really learn about oral history from listening to them. So that's sort of where I started before I did any of oral histories of my own. I spent some time listening to the oral histories done by a variety of people over the years at the UW project and, gained some insight about how to approach it. And interestingly enough, I actually re-interviewed a couple people using those initial interviews as sort of the jumping off point and asking questions that were more, germane to what I was doing. But that was a wonderful project and one I hope continues to go on.
Matt, do you have any thoughts about returning to, interview someone who's been interviewed before? I have been through your book and I noticed what you just said, that there were a couple of people that you quote as being interviewed by our project and then, 20 years later being interviewed by you.
Right. I think it's a perfectly reasonable approach. I found with the few people that I did that with, I found that their responses were pretty consistent, even though, it might have been a couple of decades since they had been interviewed by someone from the UW Oral History Project. I found that, if anything, it was sort of a testimony to the usefulness of oral history that, you could interview someone two decades later or more, and not much has changed in some ways. They're, the account that they gave was consistent.
Thanks. And you've, I think, somewhat answered this, but I always like to ask this question directly. Now, in retrospect, how did the oral histories help you create the book that you published?
That's a tough one. Some ways it's hard to distinguish between the research that I did and how different parts kind of filtered in. But I think it's fair to say that the oral history really filled in some gaps that I just wasn't able to find in the manuscript collections. It gave me the chance to ask about some of the ideas and feelings of the time. I didn't spend time during the oral histories asking about sort of timeline events. I didn't get into that because there's a great documentary history that's out there that you can kind of piece together what happened when and those kinds of things. But sort of getting that texture, I don't know that that's the perfect word, but a feeling of who was involved and who was the leader, and what it meant, for example. I talked to a few people from the 1950s that were involved in the campus communist youth group, the Labor Youth League, and, what was it like to be a member of a communist youth group in the mid-1950s in the state where Joe McCarthy was from? And those were some interesting discussions that I had about that time in particular.
So Matt, you now teach high school in McFarland,
yep.
Wisconsin, and I'm wondering if you've either envisioned using oral history in your classroom or if you have done any oral history projects since you started teaching there.
I've done some projects, although I have to say that they're not extended projects. The truth is, and people that do oral history already know this, is that oral history is not easy to do, and it takes time and it takes preparation. And, in the normal day-to-day of a high school classroom, that's a little tough to sort of set aside. But I've definitely done a variety of assignments because I have taught recent U.S. history. done a variety of assignments where I've asked students to interview an older staff member in the building or an older family member or an older family friend about, you know, anything ranging from the Kennedy assassination to, you know, Americans landing on the moon to the Vietnam War to, you know, whatever it might be. And it's always interesting, you know, it's one of the most fascinating things about it in terms of a high school student is that they get an opportunity to talk to somebody about history that they wouldn't normally do. They wouldn't normally have this conversation with a grandparent or a staff member or a family friend. And it really sort of opens up a conversation that hopefully will continue.
One last thing, Matt. You donated the interviews that you conducted to us here at the UW-Madison Archives, and I just want to give you space to talk about why you felt it was important to pass those interviews on.
Yeah, sure. I passed them on because I couldn't think of a better way to sort of honor the history that people had shared with me. It was really wonderful that people had set aside a couple of hours or even, you know, larger chunks of time. I went to people's homes. I met one of the guys I interviewed at his favorite Irish pub in town. That was Tom McCormick, a former professor here at the UW-Madison. And I really wanted to honor those memories and those conversations and those folks who had donated their time to me. And I thought no better way than to share that with the UW, which already has a wonderful collection, and sort of to add my piece to that collection. And I would hope that others would do the same. I know that some others have, because I found other collections kind of hiding out at the Historical Society or the UW Archives. So I just wanted to continue in that tradition.
Matt, we always try to give the person we're interviewing the last word. So is there anything else you want to say about your book or oral history?
I guess about oral history, I would just say it was really fascinating to do. It was really fun to do as well. And although there are definitely some challenges, I would hope that others would kind of venture down that road. As far as the book, I guess what I would say is that I really enjoyed working on it. It grabbed me from the beginning. It was something that I started working on soon after I came to Madison, and lots of opportunities along the way to sort of set it aside and move on to other things, but I really just kept rolling because I was always interested, and that passion, that interest never left, and I hope that, you know, people that read the book sort of catch on to some of that excitement or interest along the way.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Levin teaches high school social studies in McFarland, Wisconsin. You got your PhD at UW-Madison, and your book, again, is entitled Cold War University, Madison and the New Left in the 60s. Matt, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Troy.